You are now listening to Talking Transparency, the podcast where trans parents talk transparently. Hosted by Thea Ross, Melissa Lukson, and Cody Connor.
Hey everybody, welcome back. I'm Thea.
I'm Cody.
On today's episode, we are talking transparently with Gabe Harrell.
That's me.
Gabe is a comedian and improv comedy actor who's making waves in the Hampton Roads performing arts scene. A familiar face, he's a frequent participant in the 48-hour film festival. You can catch him at venues like The Venue on 35th and filming the streets of Norfolk guerrilla style. A talented entertainer, he's also a dedicated community advocate and a valued staff member at the Children's Hospital of the King's Daughters. Today, we're diving into his story, his film team, Prophets of Doom, and his burgeoning career in film. But before we do that, Cody, what do we have on the old events this week?
Yeah, so on the calendar coming up April 18th, we got our April Trans Family Dinner, and this month it's going to be at Old Dominion University.
Oh, yes, awesome. They're amazing.
So that's an exciting new thing. On the 25th, we have our Know Your Rights workshop at 757 Creative Reuse Center. On the 27th is our next round of D&D, so I'm excited about it. Actually, my wife has got really into D&D. I've been watching this show called Dimension 20.
Oh, yes. That's huge.
Yes. And so I'm thinking just a few another season, I'm going to get her to jump in.
Tell her to come.
I'm like, you're watching them. You're going to know exactly how to do this pretty soon. And you'll be the best of us. So I almost got her on the hook. Then coming up in May on the 19th is our May Trans Family Dinner. The 23rd is our t-shirt making workshop. I almost said a bad word.
Sorry. Thea's face is priceless.
On May 25th is D&D again, and then we start getting into June. June 17th is the start of Ghent Pride in Norfolk.
Super, super excited about this. This is unbelievable.
Like, I'm always excited for June.
I'm always excited for all of June, but when it comes to this June, like, I don't know. It's going to be a big one this year. I feel like there's going to be a pride in every one of the seven cities. If you're listening to this and you're in Hampton Roads, definitely check out Hampton Roads Pride. You need to see what they've got going on. It's amazing. And I know Ghent Pride especially, we're going to be down there. I don't mean to give it all. We'll be giving you more details as we get closer to June. But thank you, Cody. And thank you, Gabe, for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm happy to be here.
Of course. Let's start off with some, like, you know, really boilerplate questions, and let's, like, loosen up a little bit, you know, get it out there. What got you into comedy and performing arts, you know, in the first place? How'd you start?
So I got into improv comedy in 2019. It was August, and I was working in food service at the time, and not because of food service, but also in tandem with it, I really hated my life. And I was like, if I don't do something to give myself meaning, then things are not going to go well. So one of my friends recommended that I take this class, and I took an improv class, and then I took like six more. And I've been doing that since August 2019. Now, there was some hiatus and stuff when COVID happened, but I went right back into it after the hiatus was over, and it was just like, this is something that I really love and value, and it's probably one of the most life-changing things that I've done.
So what do you love and value so much about improv? Because improv's specific too. It's not just, I wrote down a bunch of jokes.
It is. Yeah. So improv is, did either of you guys, when you were kids, did you ever do any imaginary play where you were like playing that you were different people?
Not one time, no.
Never.
No, I'm just kidding, of course. Are you kidding me? I'm trans.
Okay.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not sure where she's going with this, but I just know I was really sad when I could no longer like socially acceptably play Han Solo. And I was just like, why do I feel like my life is over? But I really was into that as a kid, and I agree. I think some of it does tie into kind of the trans experience, because that was like when I was able to pretend that I was a boy, and now it's like, well, turns out I actually am a boy. I wasn't pretending. Improv kind of brought that back, where it's like you are literally in the moment with that person, and that's all you're thinking about. You're not thinking about what you had for dinner or what you didn't have for dinner or what this person thinks about you or anything. It's like, if you get in that flow of improv, that's all that matters. And it's like active listening, and responding in the situation in a way that's really hard to find in life elsewhere.
Wow.
Go ahead.
So I did not get into it for the comedy.
Definitely for the money, right?
Definitely for the money. Oh, yeah.
Yes, of course.
Same reason I have a bachelor's in psychology, for the money.
Oh.
For the money. Anyone who's in the field knows that's a joke. Bachelor's in psychology is a joke.
Okay. Sorry.
I do actually have it. But. Ask what.
I don't know if I'm supposed to talk yet because you were going to.
I have nothing to say at this moment.
But you,
Thea's like, Gabe, why are you doing this to me?
I love this.
I always wanted to be good at improv.
You can tell I'm really bad at it.
I am a lifetime member of the International Thespian Society.
Whoa.
Which is so good that I said that all in one try, just like that, because I almost never do. Which doesn't mean anything. It means I signed up when I was in high school after doing like a bunch of band and play performances and stuff because my drama teacher made everybody do that. And they sent me a magazine for a while and now I get to say it like that. But we would do these little improv exercises and I sucked at them. All of my friends were good and I never was. And so I was always just like in awe of the people that didn't have to memorize lines.
I'm curious what exercises. Do you remember any of them?
Some of them were two people would go sit on a bench and start trying to have a conversation. You know, usually it would end up, you know, Forrest Gump was big. So a lot of that would end up happening whenever the bench one would happen. Sometimes we'd stand in a group and we'd be given a prompt and somebody would start and then we'd kind of all jump in and
that's kind of some heavy duty warm up exercises. I mean, those are more like forms almost like improv games. I think that you got the short end of the stick on this one because it sounds like they may have already been trained in it and you weren't as much and they were going into like.
I just always felt like I was about to say something dumb. Like, everybody was about to stop laughing now. that's usually how improv went. And so whenever I see people like, what's that? Whose line is it anyway?
Mm-hmm.
I could watch that for hours in awe and just wish. Of course, that was in high school, and I just wanted to not suck when the teacher did that to me during drama class.
But. Whose line is it anyway is short form improv, which is actually what our friend Matt Cole is. I think that's one of his favorite forms.
I love Matt Cole, and I love watching short form improv because it is so engaging. I know a lot of people that's got that like stereotype where it's like, oh no, I don't want to go watch my friend's improv show. But in this day and age, it's like, can you imagine something that's better to get out of your house to go do?
Actually as connect far as with people? Like the engagement goes, yeah. I agree.
And then also it's just, I don't know. Like I said, it's for me, I was always too intimidated. The idea of getting up on the stage or that I would do something, I was very scared. And here I am hosting a podcast.
I was just going to say, so you started nonprofit and then hosted a podcast.
Yeah. And before that I was a state policy debate chair. I mean, I just love to go out there and talk and I hate it also internally. Yeah. It's amazing.
What do you think is so scary about like, cause those are two pretty similar things, right? It's a public facing role and like, you're engaging with people all the time with the nonprofit. And then in your past, what makes improv different?
I think it's the lack of filter. Like, I feel like I would, to be able to be quick enough to be effective would require me to totally drop a filter. And if I had to drop all of my filters, no one would ever talk to me again. Now, I know this sounds like the worst thing in the world, but it's more like I would just get so spicy that it would burn even my own mouth.
You would probably burn the stage down.
Exactly.
In a good way.
I hope not.
No, I mean, like, that's the kind of attitude that people look for in improv. So, just
okay.
FYI.
Also, I have a lot of friends that have done it, and
stars
they keep telling
are
me to do
usually
it.
Spicy.
Yeah. No one is like, look
big
at this bland
personalities.
Person.
I've never eaten a star, so I would not know if it was spicy. But regardless, see, this is why no one laughs when I say things.
I just looked
that
at
That was
his
a joke.
Eye. We did the same eye shift.
That's what it'd be. I say, you think I'd burn the place down? I would just make everyone groan.
No, I mean,
all
we're
night.
Laughing.
Well, I guess this is true.
Are we laughing with you, though, is the question.
Is it a question? Audience, call 100 Talking Transparency. Let us know. But anywho, let's see. tell us about your recent trip. I know you just got back from Lisbon, Portugal, because you're not just a comedian. You're also like a professional, or getting to the professional level of cinematographer.
Getting to professional. So for sure, emphasis on the getting. I'm interested in film. I've been working in film for like the past year, and a lot of times that means sitting at my computer and cleaning up my desktop so I have a place to put my files. Like that is the level where it's like I am learning how important it is to be organized and to have a goal, because I've spent a lot of my life not having a goal. And in some ways, improv has exacerbated that, because it's like, well, it's not about the goal. It's about the relationship with your scene partner and stuff. And I think that's part of why, like, I feel like film is the next step for me. So I feel like improv got me to one place in my life. It got me out of that place where I was in 2019, and I was like, I'm going to drive into a guardrail on the highway because I hate my life so much. It got me out of that to a much better place. And then it's like, now it's time for me to get out of that much better place to whatever is next. And that in some ways is really scary, because it's like, it's kind of comfortable. You know, this has been a place to hang out. But it also feels time to move on. So that brings me into Lisbon trip. So last October, I participated in the 48-hour film project horror edition for Hampton Roads. Are you guys familiar with that at all?
No. I've had some friends. I know, was it Trip Rumble? Was it last year or was it the year before last?
Yeah, Trip was in last year, and he also helped out for the December on my team. So you're awesome. Familiar with it through him a little bit.
A little bit, yes. I got to see some things, and I was – anyways. Yeah. Tell us more.
So 48-hour Film Project is a international film competition where you get a team of people together, and they can be professionals, they can be people off the street, they can be whatever, and you write, film, edit, produce a short film in 48 hours. So that means in order to do that, you have to have enough people to fill those roles. You have to have actors, directors, cinematographers, people to roll sound, editors, writers, all of that. And you ideally don't want them to be the same people through the whole project, because somebody has to sleep at some point. And it's funny, like I joked about, you know, well, I'm not trying to induce a manic episode, but I've heard from multiple people that can happen. It's an intense project is the point, because it's like, well, you sleep. They have the saying that is sleep is for the week, W-E-E-K, because the 48-hour film project is on the weekend.
Clever.
So, but I got this team together of some friends who are really, really talented, and we created this short film called Fear of Discovery, and that film won our city, which the 48 categorizes Hampton Roads as one city. If only Hampton Roads would categorize themselves as one city, then we might actually have a functioning network of people. But we won our city, and because of that, we were eligible to have our film screened at Filmapalooza, which is the global film screening for the 48-hour films. So it's all short films, and me and a couple team members went over there and got to participate in Filmapalooza.
So how was that? What was it like coming into Lisbon and just like being a part of this whole thing? Did you see any like movies or short films, I should say, that were like moving that weren't yours?
Yes.
How was the whole experience?
Is that the first time you've been out of the country?
No, I've been out of the country. My dad's a pastor and they're Presbyterian, so they wanted to go to the Presbyterian roots, which is Scotland. So okay. I've been to Scotland a couple different times, and I've been to South America. It's all actually been like kind of religious reasons that I've been out of the country. This is the first time that I've been out of the country without my parents and without – yeah, right. I know. But no, they were – I feel very privileged whenever people ask me, is this my first time out of the country? Because it's like, oh no, I've been to Europe like several times. Like, dude, shut up. My parents took me. I thank them for that. But so yeah, it was my first time in Portugal though.
Nice. What was? I've never been to Portugal. Yeah. What was? You got off the plane. Was it just like normal? What was different?
Well, I got off the plane and they handed me an oxygen mask and a wetsuit, and they were like, "Are you ready to jump in?"
Wait, is it
no? No. That's what happened when I returned to Norfolk, and they were like, "We're preparing for 100 years in the future." Anyway,
yeah.
So when I got off the plane, it was pretty quick. Got through customs. I got a SIM card for my phone. It only took me 2 days to realize that by buying a new SIM card, that also meant I had a different number.
And so nobody could call you.
No one could call me. I couldn't do two-factor authentication because it was all sending to my U.S. number. It was a mess. But the streets in Lisbon are made of tile.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like mosaic or?
It's like mosaic. So it's like this big. So like about 2 by 2, 3 by 3 inches. And it's uneven. It is not, I'm sure that it's factory cut, but it does not look like it.
Huh.
Some of it looks very, very old, but also the tiles are made to look old because we saw people installing them there. So it's like, okay, clearly it's still being maintained. It's not, when I first got there, I was like, these streets have to be like 2,000 years old.
And then there's like a bunch of dudes like putting
old
tiles.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Yeah. So I was like, oh, okay. And I'm like, kind of like the American, like, wow, it's so nice to be in a place with culture. And it's like the same stuff that's happening at home.
It's like they just went up,
damn it, there's a Taco Bell.
And the Walmart and picked up the old tiles.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah, yeah. It's like the disillusionment, but that's cool. That's part of my aesthetic is disillusionment. So, but we went to this cafe that was like up a 45-degree hill, and that was different. Just being
was there a cafe at the bottom of the hill? Because that had been the cafe that I went to.
That's the one. Like, we passed so many cafes going to this cafe, and I'm just looking at them, and we have all our luggage.
It's like, what's wrong with that
cafe? And I'm
cafe?
Like, that one looked good. That, but. But when we got there, it was nice. But I mean, who would say it's not nice if you've gone that far with everything?
Did you then have to go back down the hill to go where you were going?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
These people, so like, I'm sure that if you asked Portuguese people how they went to school, they would say uphill both ways, and it would probably
not be a lie.
It would not be a lie. Yeah. So it has a very Mediterranean and almost African, it's very close to Morocco, actually. Aesthetic that I was not anticipating.
Okay.
It was really cool. It was like a mix between Tuscan, African, and Spanish. It was just really, really different than here. Lots of monuments. Their arbory looked pretty ragged, though. I will say that one thing that I noticed, because it's like I'm saying, you know, you go there and it's like, well, yeah, America sucks, blah, blah, blah. But one thing I noticed that America does really well is they have accessible places for handicapped people who have special needs and stuff like that. You could not be on a wheelchair in that city and survive. You couldn't be on a cane. Like, you could not have physical disabilities because their ramps, like, it's almost like a joke. Like, their ramps go into stairs, their stairs go into ramps. The elevators are tiny, like, you could not fit a wheelchair on there. And I'm just looking at it and I'm like, this isn't, I don't want to say this being like, oh, I'm this social justice warrior for disability, but it was something that I noticed of like, holy shit, this is very exclusive.
I mean, I'll do it. I'll be the social justice warrior for disability. Because, I mean, it's important. The ADA is a super powerful piece of legislation. You know, I work in residential design, so I have to deal with this. When we're doing bathrooms, like, they're not even forcing us to do that in new residential design a lot of times nowadays, but it's the type of thing you can just either do it or not do it, even here in America. And a lot of times the argument actually has become, and the argument that we make as developers and designers is like, okay, person who's building this house, you know, right, everyone is going to end up disabled. Like, it's a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Everyone gets old. Everyone has different
family members,
all sorts of things. And then, do you want your house to not be as valuable? as the other house. Do you not want? And I think it's I don't want to speak up for capitalism. I'm not someone to say it's, you know, there's anything to capitalism that makes that it necessary or endemic. But I do think that, like, at least here, there have been some roundabout incentives and disincentives that have been set up around disability. Not enough. We do not do nearly enough to make our spaces navigable. But it's interesting to get that perspective. I guess it's also European towns and cities. They're so much smaller.
They're small. Well,
compact more. I guess not small, but like dense. Maybe that's the word.
It dense, I would say. And in some ways, yeah. Like, I know you're not saying literally, but in some ways the roofs are lower. Like the ceilings are lower. It just feels – there's a feeling of like – you're not caught, but it is much more close. The alleys are smaller. Like, literally, the sidewalks are this wide. They're, like, 2 feet max. But, yeah, I was surprised because I was like, this is one thing that America legitimately does well, and I think it shows that there is hope because we didn't always have the ADA, right? Like, it's not always been this way.
Well, it's a little bit harder, I know – because I'm in facilities in much older cities, people don't always acknowledge America's not very old.
Right, yeah.
And we have a lot of space. Like, we're wide open spaces.
We're not very old, and we have a lot of space. And so a lot of the things we have been building for a long time. And we built it bigger when we built it to begin with. So giving more space on sidewalks and things like that has always been kind of easier. Even in our buildings, we've naturally, because we've had so much space, we give big buildings and we do big doors and we do all of that. And so it wasn't as hard a transition in a lot of places. You'll still find places. Like, I manage a neighborhood that was built in the 70s, and you can't bring a queen-size box spring up the stairs. Mm-hmm. You got to put it through the window because they didn't have queen-size box springs. And there's nothing you can do to get them home ADA. You can't put a ramp because you can't put a ramp on it that'll meet the requirements or any of that. And so you still see it in some of our much older buildings. But when you're looking at some of these real old cities, it's very hard because that city's been there for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, not just...
That's multiple sections.
Yeah,
and that's why you find those little alleyways, because they never had to drive a car through anything until they did.
Yeah.
They were going to tear the whole city down to do it. So
no, I think that's an important perspective to take, and I'm not saying this like, oh, Lisbon sucks. You know, I think that there's things that they could do that wouldn't disrupt.
Well, it probably does suck if you're in a wheelchair. It's
I'm sure it does. Like, but there's definitely improvement to be made. And that pretty much ends my section of things that America does better. Everything else was better over there.
I think we've got a list that was it two? Do we even get to two? No, it doesn't matter.
I think it was just one.
Just the one. It was a list of one, y'all. Either way, we are number one.
It's a big one, but it's
and
just
ADA,
one.
We're, hey, we're number one in ADA, apparently. And, you know,
I don't
prison
think that's
population.
True. I would compared to 2,000-year-old cities. I would not say we have the best – like legal
probably not,
regulatory
no,
framework
no.
and you
still
know,
just prison
frameworks.
Population.
Yeah.
But anyways, did you see any good films while you were there at the film festival?
Yes.
I want to hear a little bit about your film.
Oh.
Yes. Let's
okay.
start there.
Okay. So my film, it's like I said, it's called Fear of Discovery. And the title is from a line that we randomly pulled out of Frankenstein. Which okay. is one of my favorite books. This was a team member who he was very experienced. He's been on like 7 different teams. And he was like, we were stuck on a title and we're like, what do we do? He's like, why don't we try this? This is something I've tried before. And he found it was perfect. Because the premise of the film is we got our genres were zombie and clown carnival freaks. And the way that the 48 works is you have to make something in one of those genres. You can mix the genres up if you want, but you have to use at least one. So we are a lot more like thriller, psychological, slow burn stuff. And when we pulled those, I was just like, I can't, I'm so disappointed. But I was like, no, we can do this. Like, so we picked zombie and the premise of our film, it's very heavily influenced by COVID. It's not intended to be preachy, but it's basically that there's been a pandemic and it causes zombies, whatever, and one of the people sustained a bite from the zombie, and there is a vaccine to suppress the effects, and as long as you take your vaccine on time, everything is fine indeterminately. So they've learned to live with it. It's not about like, oh, the zombies and blah, blah, blah. It just bypasses all of that. But the delivery is late. And then it's like, well, you're going to risk symptom recurrence if you wait this amount of time. And a big inspiration for me with this, which it's the thing where looking back at it, I'm like, oh, this was very obvious. But it wasn't as obvious to me then. And keep in mind, this is not something I wrote alone. I wrote this with like six other team members. So we all, this is our idea. But we also, as writers do, it's like you have what you think it means to you, right? So like part of what this story means to me is about like the trans experience. Of
absolutely. I mean, as you were saying it, I was
right
thinking that in so many ways is probably what so many trans people
it's hanging over your head,
especially in a lot of these states where you're losing,
like Florida.
Yeah,
overnight they lost access to like 80% of Florida residents lost access. I mean, you guys know this.
Yeah. Yes, we had Heather on. Moved up here from Florida. What was that episode before last? And talking about the difficulty in navigating those things. And then also, for me, you know, I don't mean to go out and talk about different surgeries and stuff, but I've had laser hair removal. To me, it's like I couldn't even if I don't get that shot. It's literally grow. It's on me. It's coming back, you know, because like there's all those sorts of things. But I digress. I can identify with that very sharply.
Yeah, it's that sense of internal dread. Like the problem is in you. All you are doing is holding it off. So that to me, and like I had needles, and I was like, we should use this needle, like because we were like, do we want it to be a pill? Do we want it to be a patch? Like, how do we want this medication to work? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I want it to be a needle, and I really strongly push for that. Because it's like that is how it feels. And I'm happy to hear that resonates with you guys, because I haven't gotten to tell that part to a lot of trans people, and people who are cis just don't – even allies, they don't fully get that feeling of where it's like, wow, this is always with you.
And I know that that's really hit me hard when it's like I've struggled to get medications.
Yeah.
Because there's been shortages of estradiol. I know there hasn't been as many – much of a shortage of testosterone, but there have been shortages in the past and difficulties getting the specific formulation that's good for you. But either way, it's just a nightmare because just waiting for something to happen or to have some recurrent – or this to set you back in some way or put you in a position, because it's a whole journey. But never mind. I don't mean to say that we're like zombies in any way.
No.
Because I mean, feel like that is not the message, y'all. We don't eat brains.
No, we do not.
But no, that idea of turning into not yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's very relevant.
Yeah.
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 And I feel like that's something that as a trans youth go through, especially, and you know, we were talking a little bit before the show about how like we age in or out of certain gender stereotypes, you know, and it's how like, we can't do this anymore. We can't be as you know, different roles and things. And it's very harsh. So it's just the feeling of your body being out of control. I think it's something that even if you're cis, even if you're sitting here and like, you have no idea, there has to be some element that you can find some empathy with. It's like, I can't control this. This is beyond me. And it's gotta be that under your skin crawl. By the way, where can we watch this film? Is there any way that we can watch it online or support the production?
Yes, it is on the YouTube channel. I will link it to you guys.
Julie, down in the dibbly-doo, or is that what they call it? Yeah. Am I aging myself? Okay, I'm aging myself.
On the line. You can find it on the line.
Find it online.
In the dibbly-doo. Find it on the webs.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, okay.
www.youtube.com/
You didn't put the HTTPS /.
I'm sorry.
I remember when I was a kid and they had somebody come into my high school class and start explaining to us how websites were going to work. And
did they explain ChatGPT?
No, that didn't exist yet. But they talked about they were explaining the difference between .coms and .orgs.
Okay.
But we're freshmen. So I immediately said orgy. That.
Never once thought of .org and thought .org.
Yeah.
Immediately.
That's the gray sexual in me. Like, huh?
What? Gray sexual. Oh.
Yep. That's great. Immediately. Yeah. They said, and .org. And I said, orgy. Because I was 15. And that's, everybody loved it but him.
I bet.
Oh my gosh. So, we talk a lot about thriving on the show. We talk about ways that we become ourselves or what is beautiful or what is, you know, fulfilling of ourselves. Mm. But what is that you try to center as success for yourself or success even for your trans sibs?
For me, I would say it's like I was saying kind of at the beginning, when I was a kid, I didn't feel a lot of gender dysphoria because I spent so much time like imagining that I was other people. And it was a really great coping mechanism for a long time. And now I don't have to pretend like that. And I like, I lost it. And it's like, it went to sleep for like 20 years or something, like a long time. And now it's like, oh, I actually can just be that person. So for me, it's me, like a lot of people say, like looking in the mirror and seeing your reflection look back at you. And it's like, I mean, yeah, but for me, it's more that internal feeling of like, maybe some people would call it chakras or something, like the heart core feeling where it's like there's an alignment. And like for a long time, I felt like I had no internal compass. Like I didn't know what I wanted. This was before improv and before film. And it's like I was just kind of drifting and I'm like, I am just so dissatisfied and everything that I do only dissatisfies me more. So it's like now I don't even want to do things because then it's like, well, how many things do I have to go through until I find something, or is this just how I'm going to feel about everything? And there was like this extreme resentment towards myself and the world because it was like, I don't want to play this role. Like, I remember when I was maybe 15 or 16, I was in a relationship with a guy, and it was a very like Christian relationship, and there was a lot of rules and restraints around it. And because I was like very rigid. I was like, well, this is what we're supposed to do and this is how we're going to do it. But like we found loopholes, of course. It's like, well, you didn't say that. So, I remember this one time when he was coming over and I like was presenting feminine and I didn't have any makeup on. And my mom was saying something like, well, don't you want to like put on a nice shirt or something? And I was like, it doesn't matter. Like, this is what he's going to see no matter what. And I remember that statement. I was just like, I felt like a depressed 1950s housewife where I was like, this is not right. Like, I shouldn't feel this way where it's like, he's going to see it anyway. This is eventually what it is. And it's like disgust and like revolt. Like, I just felt revolted by myself. And it's like looking back, that was all gender dysphoria. Like I recently looked back at this poem that I wrote, like this free write thing where it was like this clock ticking down to a woman's death. And I'm like, I thought that this was really deep, but this is really, really dysphoric. And if I had known then looking at it, it's like, it was all over the place. And it's just like, well, I never knew. And now that I know, it's like so much of my life makes sense, so much aligned, and it feels like I have a compass where I'm like, oh, I am connect, like I'm tethered. It's like I've felt untethered for a really long time. So having that feeling and feeling like I'm integrated with myself is probably what I would consider at least internal, you said thriving. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always say you have, in order to know yourself, you have to be yourself.
Yeah.
Right? And in order to love yourself, you have to know yourself.
Yeah. No, that's, I was in a relationship with someone else who gave me something similar to what you just said, which was like Japanese characters, which I don't actually know how to pronounce it, but it says, with self-knowledge comes happiness.
Yeah.
You know, it really, your story really resonates with me in different ways because there's always these different things and experiences between trans femme and trans masculine experiences, mm-hmm. both with dysphoria and euphoria, both with just lived experiences mm-hmm. and not like, but I just know that there are a lot of commonalities and there are things that connect. And I don't know.
Well, it's funny. I go back to, who were we talking to? Was it Dex? We were talking to that was talking about how a lot of trans problems are also, you know, in many ways reflections of cis problems in, mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. And it very much is. I think that's also, I mean, we've hit on it many times about how a lot of people put that hate out there because they're seeing somebody do something they've been taught to hate themselves for doing.
Yeah, that's a good way to put that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And And it really is like the whole, your whole story, Gabe, with I felt pointless.
Mm-hmm.
I felt pointless until I started being myself and finding ways to feel fulfilled in the now, to make my actions feel like they were something for me.
But it also makes sense why that wouldn't happen, because when you're, when you connect the root, or you disconnect that root of that you're trouble, like a chakra, something that's so based to who you are, it becomes almost impossible. There's like a vector of our life, if you imagine, a point where you begin and where you're going, or where you want to go, or where you end up, however you want to view it. And I think that that gets disconnected for a lot of trans people, where all of a sudden we are put off in a different path and we're not able to connect. We're not able to find that path that we naturally align to. And if you're able to find it, again, it's such joy, because all of a sudden you start flowing. You start, all of a sudden, you're not trying to, not water going uphill anymore.
Flowing is exact. That's a really good word for it. Uphill in Lisbon, water going up.
Well, it is, because you're, in so many ways, you're creating a dam for yourself up until that point.
Yeah.
And then when you remove that dam, you do start flowing. And you see that so much. And I mean, even just in everybody's life, right? How many just women in general are trying to fit a certain... perception of what a woman should be instead of just being themselves. How many men are doing the same thing? I have a coworker that I talk with often, because we share some of our mental health things, and that's one of the things that we talk about a lot, is allowing ourselves to acknowledge that we're hurting.
Yeah.
Right, because as a man, we're not allowed to feel, and to this, that means that we're not allowed to acknowledge our pain, and so we just let ourselves be destroyed without acknowledging it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there are definitely, and I don't mean to make this superficial by making it a rating system.
No.
But there are definite downsides to transitioning, that it's like, this is how you guys deal with this? Where I'm like, it's hard for me to adjust in some ways, because I transitioned late, like I was 28, 29 or whatever, that I spent a long time like hanging out with a lot of women. And even though I never felt like I fit in with them, which I'd never, like, I hated girls' nights. I like repulsed by girls' nights. And it was like, what is going on? Like, do I hate women? And I actually thought that I hated women for a while, but it was myself that presenting that way. But, I lost track of what I was saying. Darn it.
Interacting with men and going.
Right. Yeah. So, and there's some aspects though, where it is, that's a hard adjustment. I'm not sure if this is exactly what you're saying, but it is a hard adjustment where I'm like, I want to bring the light, where it's like, there are some gender norms that need to be brought over to the other side, I think, for both genders.
Oh yeah. There's some things that really we look at as gendered that we shouldn't.
Yeah.
In so many ways.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's stuff that we're taught.
Communication.
It's not natural as we were taught to be like this. Like, what's natural is to feel things and express that and share it with people and grow and build emotional strength and knowledge and consistency. That's what's natural.
Mm-hmm.
But we're taught to not do that.
Yeah.
That's natural for everybody to do. Man, woman, it's natural to feel things. But we're taught not to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so that's, to me, that's part of the magic of it all is being able to eliminate these things that are built by the patriarchy, right? That's why they exist, is to create that defined line. You have to be like this and you have to be like this, or we can't put a line between you. But seeing that happen, because that's how, you know, that crossing that line is how we become complete people. I feel so many of us
that's the integration prevent process.
We're not complete people. We've prevented ourselves from being complete people to stay within those lines.
Yeah.
And I think that it's interesting, because when you're behind that dam, whatever metaphor we want to use, when you're behind that line, or you're disconnected in that way from your, however we want to put it, I think that it's hard to see the future for yourself or others. And it's easy for other people or images or pressures to invade what you should be. And I think that, that's a really hard place to be, constantly saying this is what I should be, but I'm not. And then constant self-loathing. And that is a recursive circle that sends you down nowhere good. I know for me, the thing that really shocked me and the thing that really, I mean, you talk about cracking eggs, all sort of stuff, whatever term people want to use. Because the way I feel, I like crack my egg and then I like grab my bits of eggshell and put it back on. I was like, no, yeah, no, right. Please. Yeah. And then, but
I'm
I feel like
that, cereal this morning. Like, I don't want eggs.
No eggs, please. No eggs are gross. But
no, I know it's like it was. Yeah,
I just couldn't picture myself in the future.
I watched somebody microwave bacon today.
What?
He said he saw.
I watched somebody microwave bacon today.
What's wrong with microwaving bacon?
I think that's what he was thinking about.
Yes, that. Sorry, that was
the egg. Yeah,
the egg.
Oh,
and
I thought you were saying that it was like it was a semantic bad thing. It was a
side I warned story you that I'm ADHD.
Yeah,
it's
okay. Y'all, I want
it's called
now.
A semantic intrusion. In case anyone is curious,
I remember now. I was saying that I could not see myself in the future.
Yeah,
now, that was a thing. Like,
no, I couldn't either.
And when I really sat down, I was like, "What do I want to do?" Because I feel like I went through and have been a bit of a sophist, for so to speak. You know, I've gone through and done a little bit of this, tried a little bit of this, tried a little bit of this, a little bit of this, read here, tried this, and gained a lot of experience, but never found something or places that I fit in or felt like it was really comfortable.
Yeah,
and a lot of that's because it's an internal thing. You know, you can run away as far as you want, but you still bring yourself with you type thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I know that like when I finally held on to that image of who I was in the future and like brought that into focus and did that work to like look, talk to myself, go to that, do the inner child work, so to speak, and then actually say, who am I and where I want to go, reconnecting that line, so to speak, that gets disconnected. It's so freeing because then you no longer have to worry as much about the shoulds. It really is more about the would I do that because I am this. And it's a sense of self that is lost. And I think that's something that you're saying. It's not unique to transness. I think there's so many cis folks who are listening to this and probably think, wow, you know, what is my sense of self? And it's not even about gender necessarily. It's not, that's a unique trans experience. It's uniquely to how you trans folks have experienced life, but it's, there are other things that we've talked about it before. People who don't play piano, or people who don't want to paint, or people who don't cook, or people who don't do this in a thousand different ways, not just for gendered reasons, but for, because someone told you that was stupid.
No, I could not agree with you more. That is a big, I'm so happy to hear you make that distinction, because I think there's something where there is kind of like in some circles, it's like, well, this will fix everything. And it's like, it's not going to fix everything. Mm-hmm. It's going to let you be able to start fixing other things if you want to.
Yeah. It's going to put you in a place to start fixing things.
You will have the tools.
In and of itself, it will fix nothing, but you will be in a place to begin fixing the things that you want to fix.
Yeah.
So do not ever approach transition as a panacea, what I like to say. It's not going to solve all this. It's not a piece of technology. It's not the magic button. Boom, I'm no longer depressed. And I know
nothing is. People love to think that something is going to be a magic button. Yeah. There is none.
Mm. Valium's pretty good, though.
Wait, what?
Nothing. Let's continue.
No, Thea made a joke.
I said Valium's pretty
good. Valium, okay. All right, that's better. I heard gallium, and I was like, periodic table? Valium makes sense.
Yes, the liquid metal.
Valium is better.
Yes, very cool, honestly. It's liquid at room temperature. You can melt it with your hands. It's very cool. Anyways, what were we talking about again? The ADHD podcast.
Oh, welcome. Yeah, right. I know.
Microwave bacon?
No. Oh, yeah, so, bacon.
Wait, now that you know I'm a lifetime member of the International Thespian Society, how do I get in your next movie? Just like a cameo?
If you want to hold a mic.
Background, I'll walk through with a coffee. Just,
I am dead serious. Yes. Come join us.
Just let me know when your next thing is.
I'm going to friend you on Facebook.
Yes, absolutely.
You're going to regret this.
I'll hold a mic or anything. Yeah.
If you want to be there, then I want to work with you. That's kind of how I feel about film crew right now. So, yeah. No, if it's okay, if we have time for it, am I able to say a little bit about like what my experiences was in response to how you felt with that?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Please. No. Continue.
Okay. All right.
You've got all the time in the world, especially for these conversations.
Okay. So, I don't really know how to say this on the air because I ingested an illicit substance.
I mean, we're talking transparently here. You know, the Air Force won't come and get you.
That's true. That's we're gonna say in the range of psychedelic.
Oh, okay.
Ooh.
Okay.
So I'm
organic.
Just,
I guess it comes
from an originally organic source. That's where it starts.
Is it a rye source?
No.
No, okay.
I think it's probably enough to say that it was a psychedelic substance.
Okay.
This was back in 2020. Well,
There's different experiences. That's why I'm like trying.
Right. This was about a 12-hour one.
I really want the cops to just bust in right now.
I know. It'll happen in whenever you post this episode.
No, please calm down.
Okay. And anyway, no, it was LSD.
Yeah, so it does. You can make LSD out of rye.
Make it out of rye.
Okay.
I was not.
Don't do that at home.
Yeah, don't do drugs.
So actually,
drugs will turn you trans.
That's not what we want to be putting out there, GameStop.
I know, right? No, that's
they're turning the freaking frogs.
Yes, I know. I'm joking. Let me finish telling the story. Do not soundbite that. Gabe Harrell said.
I mean, you just gave us the first part, of
right?
It, so.
I know. That's it, but it brings you back for more, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so I did LSD for the technical first time with someone that I was dating, and it was this experience that was like nothing that I'd ever had before, where I had this, it was like a vision kind of, and I was like on a mountain and I was with my boyfriend, and it was like I saw myself outside of my body, and then I was like, why are we both boys? And I was really confused, where I was just like, and in that moment, I was like, this is who I really am. And I was just observing myself. And I was like, oh, no. Because it was like this realization where I was like, I know.
Epiphany moment.
It was an epiphany. Like, and I've never had anything like that again on psychedelics. And it actually took me 6 months after that to very closely look at, is this real or was this a drug-induced experience? Because I didn't want to be like, oh, I did drugs and now I'm trans. Like, I was very careful with it and careful with how much weight I put on that experience because I was under the influence of substances. But I think what happened was that it unlocked that part of myself and it took down that guard and the filter and stuff that was like the dam. Basically, it broke the dam. And when I realized it, there's this song from the Tenet soundtrack that is what that experience felt like. And that song, I'll send it to you guys later, but it's really beautiful, surprisingly, especially because Tenet is like the most confusing movie ever. I don't know if you guys saw it, but this song is like strings and baskets weaving together. And it was like, I heard this and I saw every piece from my life that stood out as like this weird unsolved mystery where it's like, why do I feel this way? Like that the story with my boyfriend in the shirt. Why do I feel this way? What am I saying that he's eventually going to see who I am? Like, who am I talking about? And it was like, it didn't make everything make sense. But if I wanted to paint with a broad brush, I could definitely say that because it was like, this is a big fucking deal.
Wow. For me, I know I've talked to a couple of the trans people because when I really accepted, like when it was like smacking in my face and I could not accept who I was anymore.
Yeah.
Because I was hiding for a long time. I didn't come out till I was 30, you know, which is, I guess, you know, what, 3 or 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years. I don't know.
So you know that feeling too then.
I kind of sort of do.
Yeah.
And then what was for me and what what other folks have told me is that there was like a 2 week, 3 week period of frantic, not necessarily denial, but just like trying to be like
flailing.
And then like memories popping up and then just constant. I probably filled 2 or 3 journals, you know, and I journal and I write all the time, but it was just like a constant thing of like this thing happening. I didn't experience it as like I took a substance or like had like a moment or an experience. It was more like a prolonged state of mania and frustration because of the fear that I had. And also like, because I had this fear throughout my entire life, different things that I knew that I wasn't supposed to do, things that I couldn't do, things that I got caught doing, all sorts of different things in my life. But I know that, A lot of that got put, the way I said it, like at the bottom of the ocean, under the biggest rock, and then chains over that rock, and then, you know, and that's where I would keep Thea. That's where I would keep parts of myself, and the, you know, and so I guess being able to just like go down that there, just like release the rock, and all of a sudden have it come up without having to do all of that work, or not necessarily having to do the work, because I don't want to imply that
it was a shortcut. I will say it was definitely a shortcut. I don't know how long it would have taken me, because I was like really blindsided. Like when I told people, they were like, "So all these years you didn't tell me?" And I'm like, "No, I didn't know. I did not know.
I didn't have the words until somebody turned that light on."
Yeah,
and I was like, "Oh."
And the next day after that, like my body was sore, and it wasn't, again, this was not like a drug induced like thing. This was, I've had experience since then, and this has never happened again that way. Like I felt like I'd been hit by a train.
Well, you know, manhood will do them. So you're always a man. I'm sorry. I don't want to say it that way, but I just wanted to just appreciate, take a moment to appreciate how you've shared and opened up so much about this experience. Cause I know we've had lots of trans folks come on, and it's not easy to talk about those moments.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. And thank you again for having me. I wish that in some ways that it did not involve drugs for me, because I do think it's off-putting to people on top of the fact that you're already talking about transgender.
There's a lot of people that I think have that experience, especially with psychedelics. Not specifically regards to transgender, but that experience of epiphany, that removing of a filter or a wall and allows them to have thoughts that they were refusing to think.
Yeah. Yeah. The refusal removal is real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess when it comes down to it, I was hoping to talk a little bit about, you know, what does the trans family mean to you? And also, you mentioned a little bit about like growing up, was it Presbyterian?
Yeah.
And having a pastor as a parent. And you know, tell me a little bit about what that was like for you. And then also, where are you today? Where are you theologically? Where are you, you know, get into the ontology.
Thea breaking out the theology, yes.
Theology.
Theology, yeah. okay, so what the trans family means to me, well, I think that as we go into this year, an election year, the trans family is – it's this kind of thing where I do think that we have to stick together, because there are so many similarities between what we're living through right now and some very bad things in the past. I think that there's like a sense of – camaraderie, especially like hearing you guys' experiences and how, like you said, there's always differences, but there's these core things that are consistent with the experience, that it's like, this is a real thing. Anyone who's trying to take this away and say that we don't deserve to feel tethered to ourselves needs to be dealt with.
Yeah, I don't know how we deal with them, but I'd like to bring them back down to earth so that they were more connected to themselves.
Yeah, yeah. It's like you can only think that this – they are more lost, right? Because it's like why else would you want to take this away? So, yeah, the trans family means like camaraderie and I guess like in a sense of acceptance to me, where it's like you're a trans woman, I'm a trans man. I don't know everything that you go through, but you and I can look at each other and you and I can look at each other and be like, hot, like that's funny. Like funny stuff happens all the time in the trans experience. And like, if you know, you know.
And I don't know. I wouldn't even say like there's painful things. There's funny things. There's joyous things.
Yeah.
There's this fork one, but I think that's part of being human. And I think mm-hmm. that people that listen, if you're a cis person listening to this and thinking, oh, it's some, you know, foreign or otherworldly experience, which is, or like different from a different type of family.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of times for me, I want to have a family.
Yeah.
You know, I would like a lot of the trans people I know have families, already have children, or have unconventional families. They have all sorts of different types and ways of people, foster parents or adoptions, even if it's not legal. There's all sorts of different ways in which people show up for and create families. And that's one thing that that I think is important for me, because I don't know what my family's going to look like. I just know it's not going to look exactly like everyone else's family. And I want it still to be respected. And is there, do you see a family in the future? Are you just like, you know, big shots, Hollywood cinematographer, you know?
Oh God, are those the two choices?
I don't know. There's probably a few more in there somewhere. Two? You can pick a few.
I see myself.
Yeah, dad jokes.
Right. More dad. I'd say more on the dad jokes. I'm adopted. I am a big fan of adoption. I could see that. And like, I don't know. I kind of see myself like out in a cabin in the woods editing someone's movie in a different time zone.
that sounds lovely. Honestly.
Yeah. Like that's kind of what I'm like. I'm like, I enjoy directing. I enjoy doing all this other stuff, but I'm like, but if I could make my job actually editing and I could do it out in nature and I could be with like, I could see myself getting married. They would have to be a pretty idiosyncratic person, but I could see it happening. That was a
really
yes
low.
And. That it's was like a yes and.
They were knew we were here.
I think they wanted your number.
Yeah, they wanted, right?
They heard you talking about, but they were like, oh.
I want to go out in the cabin in the woods.
It's all right. It's the perfect signal because we're we're right about there. We've been red light flashed twice already.
This is true. Is there anything before we get before we end the episode and try to move on with our evenings and
move
flee,
on with your lives? Yes.
No, not just move on. Flee the Air Force. Is there anything that's coming up? Anything that, that you are doing? Anything you're producing that you'd like to tell the audience about or tell us about? You know, that get us out. And supporting?
Yes, I would. So I want to start first. My film team, they're super cool. We're called Prophets of Doom, spelled Profits. Prophets of Doom as in capitalism, not just capitalism, but kind of the it sounds as edgelord as it feels. I'm like, why did I pick this name? I really like it though. I love my team members. They're all amazingly talented. Salem was my assistant director for the most recent one, and she does burlesque dancing, and she has a queer owned and operated business with her partner Isabel, her business partner Isabel Astrom. I'm going to pronounce this. I believe it's Nocte Covina Burlesque. And her next burlesque show.
They're coming for us. I'm sorry.
Is May 11th. Doors at 8:30. And it's at the showtime is at 9 at the venue on 35th in Norfolk. And it's classic rock themed. She's super talented. She's great at getting shit done. One of the most loyal people I know. And then one more from another team member. She has assistant directed for me before. She's a great music composer, great actor. She is going to be in Every Brilliant Thing. It's a one-person show about suicide prevention and mental health. And there's various dates and locations for the public. It's open in all of Hampton Roads. I can give you guys a link for that too.
Absolutely. We're going to put it all in the doobly-doo. And if there's any way that anyone wanted to contract you or contact you just to be able to get video videographer services or cinematographer services, how would they do that?
I would say to go through GabeJames93@gmail.com. Email me. I can give you guys a card with all my contact information. I'm also on Instagram at GabrielJamesWonders. And I have an email address for Prophets of Doom, which is brand new, and I believe that it's writeprophetsofdoom@gmail.com. I will confirm that and let you guys know. And then the last thing I want to plug, just real quick, sorry, Ty, is most recent short film we finished shooting, a big reason that I couldn't be on the podcast earlier, because it was a short film that ended up being 39 pages. It is called Non-Refundable, and it's about the choices that we make that we don't realize that we're making at the time, and would we still keep those choices if we had known?
I like it.
That's an awesome topic, because I know we don't want to be full of remorse and regret, but we do want to be making intelligent decisions in the future.
So. Yeah, mindful.
Mindful.
Yeah.
All right, well.
Thank you guys so much for having me on and putting up with my ADHD responses.
It was a
super
pleasure.
Super happy to have you on. It was a good conversation, an amazing conversation.
Absolutely. And Cody, I should ask too, is there anything going on that you want to plug? Anything that's going on coming up in the next couple months?
Outside of our calendar that I went through? No. Not really. I'm just really looking forward to us being part of Ghent Pride.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I Ghent think Pride it's gonna is going to be so a lot of fun, good experience. Just working on my staying in character for D&D. Gotcha. Watching that show, so I feel like I got to up my game.
Oh, that enrolled.
You said 20. You're trying to get your wife to play, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Bring her in too.
Just start playing like that show while she sleeps.
Too late. She already falls asleep watching that show. So I think I'm too far out of it.
Trans. Well, they're coming back around.
Trans Joy
they found us.
Beats hate every time. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Collective Tattoo and the Kalos Coalition. We are listener-supported, so if you like the show, please consider donating to us on Patreon at patreon.com/talkingtransparency. Like, share, and subscribe across social media, and be sure to visit our Linktree at linktree.com/talkingtrans.